This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome to Baldly Go, the officially unofficial podcast for all of Star Trek. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And this week we're talking Strange New World, Season 2, Episode 10. It's Hegemony. It's the finale of Season 2. Aaron, what'd you think?
It is a solid episode. It is a solid half of an episode because this is Strange New World's first to be continued. I don't know how it's going to end, but I can already tell you it's not going to be as good as Best of Both Worlds.
That's exactly what came to my mind. I'm like, because, okay, somebody got taken over by aliens. Yeah.
Yeah, because that finale had the balls to have Riker give a decisive order, not just to have him flop sweat for 60 seconds on the bridge as you have various dramatic camera angles and background voiceovers of Unich and Riley desperately asking her captain to make a decision, any command decision, honestly. Just say something, Pike. Christ.
Sing it if you have to.
Exactly. I guess I'm sounding a little bit more negative than I'm intending.
Good.
But yeah, no, I like this episode. I liked Gorn. It's one of those things where it's like, this is shaping up to be such an iconic Star Trek villain that it makes me wonder how the heck we never really considered Gorn as a serious threat before. Like, one of the theses of this series now has to be, make it make sense to me that the Gorn can be like trustworthy allies, or at least like, you know, not going to come through and try to take over the Federation, because they just seem terrifying.
I mean, they're gonna have to, like, I don't know, founder style genocide them, right?
And well,
even then that comes back on them later.
Right, yeah, right. I mean,
of like TNG, like, how did they not?
Yeah,
how is this not an issue?
I feel like they are setting the groundwork that they're going to have some kind of like, well, we just don't understand the Gorn. You know, we're driving them crazy with these solar flares and whatnot. Our brightly lit ships are just like buffet invitations. I'm not sure, but they need to answer that to I guess, the average fan satisfaction. But the big lead is Chief Montgomery Scott in the form of young Lieutenant Scott. That came out of nowhere. I was not anticipating seeing another old face on the Enterprise. What'd you think of this episode and the Scott reveal?
Yeah, I think everybody was looking for the McCoy, right? Because you want to get the trifecta together. Scott came out of nowhere for me too, and we see him before we realize who it is, right? Although I bet, you know, observant fans were really like, oh, I know who that is.
That was my question to you, is like, did you, because I got it about 10 seconds early, which is about, you know, because I'm like, red shirt, Scottish accent? No. And then
I'm an idiot, apparently, because I didn't get it until he said, I'm Lieutenant Montgomery Scott. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I recognize that name.
Yeah. Yeah. Big deal.
I really like this episode. I think, you know, they've been teasing the Gorn shit all season, right?
Sure.
Got the admirals worrying about it, and it's kind of in the background in this episode. It's thrust into the foreground. I guess I hadn't been getting impatient. I hadn't been like, okay, when are they going to do something with this Gorn stuff? They did that pretty well. And so this episode didn't feel like, oh, finally. It felt more like, okay, I'm excited to see what they've got in store for this. I like the Gorn. I think, you know, this is a very different kind of Trek than I'm used to. If you look at action scenes from like a TNG or something, they're barely passable as TV action scenes. This stuff is so much better. You look at Picard and some of those are barely passable as TV action scenes. This stuff's a lot better. I really like the scene with Spock and Chapel. fighting one of the Gorn together.
In the aftermath of that, while they're embracing in space as the saucer of the Cayuga. Yeah, I mean, just jaw-dropping.
Yeah, some great imagery there. And, you know, I'm okay with this just being aliens, right? I think the first time around, I was really like, did you just rip off Ridley Scott that hard? Are you that shameless? And it was a cool episode, no doubt, but it left something a little bitter in my mouth. Just wholesale lifting Alien. This time around, I'm like, okay, they're going to do it, and I'm okay with that, I guess.
That's so funny, because I've had the... Are they real? Because the first one's like, okay, yeah, okay, chestbursters, whatever. But now that we've seen an adult Gorn, they are... I mean, you're kind... I mean, they, yeah, like the yeah. tail... Uh-huh. The life cycle, the scanners, the movement scanners are making the exact same. Yeah, like someone had to write a royalty check to James Cameron for that. Had to. I don't know how I feel about the fact that they're just shamelessly leaning into it, like using recognizable sound effects and just like some camera angles of like that tail dropping down. I mean, yeah. that's just totally pilfered from Ridley Scott and James Cameron.
Mm-hmm. Spock shouts, "Get away from her, you bitch!" Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, I thought that was, and they ripped Data in half. He spills all his android milk all over. I don't know. It's like, I guess it's better to be shameless than to be like, "No, alien, what the hell? I've never even heard of Geiger, barely knew her."
Then you can at least claim it's an homage, right?
Yeah, but now it's just, yeah, I don't know. I can't think of any other Star Trek villains that are kind of like that. You know, like the Borg were essentially space zombies, you know, with a little bit of like collective conscious throw in. The Romulans and Klingons were wholly original inventions based on, you know, kind of how we felt about the Chinese communists, Russian communists, you know, the quote unquote bad guys of the 60s. This is the first time I can think someone just control C, control V'd. And I'm like, again, it doesn't really bother me, but it's like one of those things where, like, if this is going to be the signature villain for the series, boy, they need to find a way to differentiate themselves a little bit, because, you know, what's next? Pike's going to crash land on a prison.
Star Trek's not above prison planets for sure.
Yeah, Betal, because she got, you know, impregnated by the Gorn, she's going to turn into a half Gorn, half human hybrid with superpowers.
Oh,
like, where I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like, we started the Alien, we moved on to Aliens. Like, maybe pump the brakes before we just start. Down that path. That's the only because they work. They're very scary. They look amazing. Mm-hmm. It's really funny to go back and see like the Gorn from the original series, and then you compare him to like the fully adult Gorn we see in here, and it's just like, man, there's no contest. Like, I don't think Kirk. I don't care how many bamboo bazookas he's got. I don't care how many. I don't think Kirk takes these guys on a fair fight and conventional gravity one-on-one, but
they have tried in the past to come up with an explanation about what happened to the Klingons that changed their appearance so drastically. Are they going to try and do that with the Gorn?
Are they going to hit the Gorn with their,
possibly do that?
Yeah, you hit the Gorn with a retro evolution virus that devolves them to be more lizard like, and it's like, yeah,
strand
that's what happens.
Planet,
so now they're the sleeve sack looking dudes. Yeah, that could be. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, I don't know if that works as well, but I don't know. We'll see what they do with it. I say lean into it at this point. Like, it's obviously what they're doing. It's shameless. Just do it, you know.
But, yeah, it's better to do it in the open than to try to, you know, convince people that you're not doing it. But
you have to gaslight people. That's
like I said,
work.
When that motion tracker started up, I'm like, oh my God, holy cow.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, maybe we should get into the episode then.
Yeah, let's do it.
Set phasers to add. We'll be right back.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
It's the 40th anniversary of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom this week. And while the movie might be old enough to belong in a museum, our podcast is brand new. So join us for a conversation on the third or fourth best Indiana Jones movie, depending on who you ask, this Wednesday.
And if retro adventure movies aren't your thing, well, maybe you'll enjoy a time warp in the form of a prequel with the theatrical release of Furiosa. Flashback with us to a time when Charlize Theron looked like Anna Taylor-Joy, and strap in for another epic George Miller action movie this Thursday on Bald Move Pulp.
And finally, we're wrapping up our four-week coverage of the 1980 TV miniseries Shogun. Get the final verdict on Yabu, JB, Mariko, and the rest of the gang this Thursday on Bald Move Prestige.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Captain on Bridge, welcome back to Baldly Go. We start off with Captain Battelle's log. The Kyuga is at Carnassus Beta. It's a small town, Midwest-style planet. And they're there to help stabilize crops, provide vaccinations. Chapel's helping, apparently. She's doing her fellowship on the Kyuga? Is that...
No, she's en route to her fellowship. The Cayuga is the taxi that is taking her there. She could get there a couple days early by accompanying them in the mission. And I was a little confused on my first watch on that, too. But yeah.
Okay. Pike calls Battelle for no reason, just to talk. And then everyone's comms go out mid-call. And a giant alien ship breaches the atmosphere. I don't think we've seen one of their ships before, so I wasn't immediately... picking up, hey, this is Gorn.
Not their full-on attack cruiser, I do not think. But when the Gorn music started up, that was... I thought that was kind of cool. It's also a little Independence Day 4, this big saucer-looking thing coming into the atmosphere. I have so many thoughts about this opening scene. When they started off, and this place is looking like Woodbury... from Walking Dead, I'm like, how are they going to justify the fact that they're just landing on a 20th century Earth town? And where they're like, oh, it was intentionally constructed on a small town model going after like the mid 20th century Midwestern United States. I'm like, this is but then I'm realized I live in a neighborhood where it was constructed deliberately to look like Tudor architecture, like 16th century, 15th century English architecture. It's not that crazy. It's not that crazy for a particular founder to get a wild hair to be like, I really like that aesthetic. I really like, you know, the small town mystique. I don't know if they're a one-to-one, like, you know, you have like a fucking Ben Franklin and a Five and Dime and a barbershop on the corner, but like, I guess it wasn't as ridiculous as I might have first met. Did you have similar thoughts, or you just like, fuck it, it's a Star Trek planet?
Yeah, why not? And they have a lot of like future tech mixed in there too, right? It seemed to me like there were maybe some electric charging stations for vehicles instead of, you know, gas stations and stuff like that. So it was a little modified, a little brought into the 23rd century.
The other thing, don't you miss the days where the Enterprise could just ferry around a cargo hold full of vaccines and have no one thought to think, like, it was just like, oh, this is just the most boring, bland, universally humanitarian good cargo we can have the Enterprise going around, and now it's I don't know. I guess if I was on the other side, I might think that wouldn't it nice to be living in the days where you could trust that the vaccines were safe and not reprogramming you to be a 5G tower? But anyway,
Well, they're asking for all this assistance, right? It seems like stuff was not going super well there, maybe. I mean, if you're talking about having to come in to stabilize crops, maybe they were having some food shortage issues.
Yeah, it does seem like this is maybe a not well thought through settlement. They settled outside the Federation on a border sharing with Gorn. You know, maybe the Federation wouldn't approve their 1950s America plan. They're like, we have some concerns about this. But for whatever reason, yeah, I kind of got that idea too, that this is a colony that needs a lot of help to get on its feet and is going to get a lot of help becoming meat instead.
And the Federation is kind of courting them to join, seemingly, by offering.
Is that what it is?
Or are they just do-gooders? I don't know, because Batel, when she's talking to Pike, says something about, like, well, it's balance between protection and putting a target on their heads, I think, is what she says. In reference to them potentially joining the Federation. So I think, I mean, the Federation is always looking for new members.
Yeah, they have this soft power that it's like, oh, isn't it nice to be friends with the Federation? And before you know it, that place is hoisting the blue flag. And
yeah, you got their first citizen in Starfleet.
Yeah, exactly. This shuttlecraft that's crash landing in the background, I think that's, you're supposed to understand that that is Chief, that's Montgomery's, that's Chief Scott, or I guess Lieutenant Scott, crash landing, right?
Yeah, I think so. At first I was wondering, is Chapel on that, right? Because we're all concerned with where's Chapel
during
the course of this episode. So that maybe she had crashed, because the Cayuga's not looking good once we spot it. But yeah, that's Scotty's shuttle. And then Batel puts out a distress call saying they're under attack by the Gorn. Enterprise picks it up and starts speeding there. And Pike calls up the Admiral, who tells him he'd like to avoid war with the Gorn, so Pike needs to play it cool there.
Can I say that I really like that they have a consistent Admiral? Like, I always thought that was weird in The Next Generation, where, like, anytime you talk to an admiral, is always somebody different. Like, goddamn, is there not a, like, once you get out of the captain chair, is there no chain of command? It's just a bunch of admiral staff, a fucking phone bank in San Francisco, and just the first call, just pick up. It's like, isn't there, like, fleets and sectors? And, like, you gotta fit in there somewhere, right? You should be reporting to the same guy for at least a season or two. I like that they have this consistent Admiral April, where you can kind of get an idea of his style of command, what he's about, how flexible he is. I'm enjoying that. Even though he doesn't show up a lot this season.
Right. He's in there a few times.
He's mentioned a ton, though, and that gives you, like, you can kind of put the name at the face.
And they were better about that after TNG, I think. Like, DS9 had a pretty stable admiral, but they were friends, right, Sisko and him? So he's kind of the go-to admiral. I think admirals just have so much vacation time that every time you call, it's like, well, that admiral's on vacation, so you got to speak to this other admiral.
Yeah, you get the substitute admiral.
Yeah, they work about 4 weeks a year. That's what I'm getting.
It's interesting, though, because, like, beginning of this episode, Pike, you know, dealing with the potential death of his beloved, of his girlfriend, is taking a hard line against the Gorn. You know, like, I've met them. You can't understand them. They're just monsters. And April comes back with, that's the thing about understanding versus monsters. A lot of times what you think is a monster is just something you don't understand. Midway through this episode, Pike will be ruminating on that long enough that he's kind of coming around to, like, gosh, we just have to figure out what it is about these Gorn that are setting us off.
Yeah, I mean, it's why the end of this episode is so strong, because he's got a choice to make, and you know how he feels about it personally, right? He's had an experience with the Gorn that has made him think they're just monsters. They have infected Captain Batel, who, you know, is very important to him. He's kind of pissed off. He's taking it all personally, right? But he's also in charge of the future of the Federation. So, you know, you fire this shot, this might be the start of a war that you can't win.
Yeah, it's a gray area. These are, I guess, Federation citizens, but they're in outside the Federation jurisdiction colony. So it's a delicate thing. It's like, it's very, especially now that we know what Gorn conquest looks like in terms of the impregnation and chest bursting of everything that's distasteful to the Federation, but also there's an element of like, oh, they fucked around and they're finding out now. You know, it's not going to be just a crops failing and the space plague to get some.
Yeah, and the way they portray the Gorn occupation, let's say, is pretty brutal. Not just because they're monsters and they come down and tear people up, but they trap you on the planet, right? Like, they send down this tower thing that cuts all communications, cuts the ability to transport out, and you're stuck there with them. And hand-to-hand, one-on-one, most species don't seem to be a match for the Gorn.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's like, yeah, that's the kind of like the trap door swinging shut.
Yeah.
And there's no way, even if another ship arrived to help, there's just going to be another victim wriggling in the net. It is chilling. And I guess that's the one distinguishing difference that you would think between the Borg and the Gorn, or I'm sorry, the aliens from Alien and Gorn, is that Gorn have a civilization. They are thinking creatures. At some level, it's not just like a queen that's directing by instinct. Like, this is an intelligence that's pitted against you. So that alone, like, you know, if the aliens were from the Ridley Scott movies were actually intelligent, they would be even more terrifying. But
The Gorn build spaceships. They wear space suits, right? They clearly have a very strong scientific understanding. They're very intelligent.
You know what's scary? What's scarier than an alien? An alien with a pulse rifle. An alien with a space suit. You just can't wave a flamethrower around and kill him.
So Enterprise arrives at Carnassus to find the Cayuga nothing but a cloud of debris.
Yeah, that's a really slick CGI environment. The destroyed Cayuga. It looks just really cool. We've seen some carnage in Star Trek before. I imagine the newer shows have a lot more than this, but like I'm thinking like Wolf 359 and how like this is just like this one little teeny scene just puts all that to shame.
Sure. And this scene, you know, when you see this, you're supposed to be thinking, oh my God, where's Chapel? Right.
Right.
Not where I thought she was.
Yeah. How could you possibly survive something like this?
Yeah. And over the course of the next few scenes, they'll be like, they'll start to kick open the door to that, right? Like, well, you know, it looks bad, but there's some pockets of life support, maybe.
And we know just from the timing that she was unlikely to be in sick bay. So that was like a smoke and crater kind of thing that they, but we know that like, yeah, she's probably somewhere between the transporter room and sick bay. So there's still hope. Still hope, Spock.
Yeah, because they don't just transport you directly to where you want to go. They transport you to the transporter pads for some reason, and then you have to walk to where you want to go.
So it's more energy efficient. We got the pads focusing the energy, you know?
Okay, yeah.
You just want to be doing point-to-point transports all willy-nilly. It's too inefficient. That's you know, they don't want to tax the matter-antimatter engines that just barely keeping up with the power demands of the ship.
Yeah, you want to get stuck in the buffer because that's how you get stuck in the buffer.
It's true. I don't want to get stuck in a buffer.
No. The Gorn have an interference field disrupting comms, transporters, everything. Another Gorn ship warps in. It's a hunter ship, apparently there to look for, you know, to keep a perimeter here. Starfleet calls saying they received an image from the Gorn. It's their declared border with the Federation. And Carnassus is just inside the new Gorn space, Enterprise just outside.
There's a lot of things that really really beggared my suspension of disbelief. This demarcation line that's between the orbit of the planet and the moon that's orbiting, like, can someone please draw me a map of how this works over a day-night cycle?
The Klingons and the Federation sharing that deuterium planet or dilithium planet, whatever it was, where, you know, half the year they get it, half the year the Federation gets it, right?
But even crazy, it's like drawing a line. It's like drawing a line down the toilet bowl and saying this side is yours and this side is mine, and then flushing it. Like, okay, well, if we want to rescue the crew of the cut, let's just wait like 6 hours until the planet rotates into our section of the space, and then we take it. But
it's bonkers. It's literally only there to let you know that they can't go to the planet, right?
Just so you can have Pike seethe across a littered starfield with his girlfriend's debris, presumably, and look at that Gordon ship that's going, you can't touch me, you know, it's that, it's that.
Yeah, totally. No, that was ridiculous.
But they also, they don't really do anything with this, but they suggest that, you know, Starfleet protocol to try to make communication in any way possible. And Uhura points out they could do visual signals like lights and fires and whatnot from both the ground and inside the ship. And they talk about putting people for, you know, keeping an outlook for that kind of stuff. But then nothing really comes of it. I thought they were going to get to something like that with Nurse Chapel and the flashlight, but...
Uh-huh. Yeah, she starts to try something like that, but then it goes nowhere. Maybe they'll try it next episode.
She's much more interested in the idea of just directly getting Spock's attention, who's in front of her. But yeah, I wonder, because I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting, clever. I could see how that... but maybe they're also doing some work to suggest that there is some alternate... Because they talk about how the Gorn ships apparently communicate through visual signals. Like, they have some kind of patterns that they can show on the outside of their hull. I thought maybe they're going to suggest a commonality. Like, maybe in part two that they do communicate with beams of light and whatnot to the Gorn. So they're going to tie it together that way. But that's like a one-sentence throwaway line that you're going to have to remember. You're going to have to hold on to for a year. Maybe longer with the strike, so we'll see.
God, I hope they had a plan for the second half of this episode before they
I promise you, if this turns out to be the case in part two, I will not remember that I made this prediction. So, like...
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, I'll let people send that in for feedback as a nice surprise next year, if it happens.
yeah, it's very Independence Day in that way, right? With the communication via the lights... like you were saying, it's not just that shot of it coming through the atmosphere, but the way they communicate seems to be similar.
Yeah.
Or at least, I guess, the way we tried to communicate with them. I don't know how successful that was. Anyway, Pike.
It worked better in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, though. So
yeah.
Not so well in Independence Day.
Pike meets with his bridge crew. He wants to cross the line, literally, and asks for volunteers. Everyone volunteers, including Sam Kirk. Pike introduces the crew to his secret Gorn weapon, which is just a box full of enhanced phasers, it seems. Phasers that, I don't know, rotate their frequencies or something.
Yeah, phasers that can, they're tuned to blow through reptile skin.
Are the old
tricorders
not?
That are... Tricorders that are recalibrated to detect Gorn life signs and the nitrogen grenades. We didn't see one go off this episode, but I guarantee we will on the second half. And that sounds pretty fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
Instant Terminator 1000 death for any Gorn. Or like Mbinga. It's like, oh, lethal to to lizards with low blood temperatures or whatever. And Mbinga's like, lethal to anyone, honestly.
Right.
You freeze anyone to negative 400 degrees, they're going to die, you know?
Yeah. No, I assume it's going to be very... It's got to be very best of both worlds, right? Next episode, they kind of have to go over to the Gorn ship because all the colonists are over there. That's probably where we'll see the nitro grenades.
Jesus. Well, I mean, the best of both worlds, they have the Borg who just conveniently don't consider an individual crew person traipsing aboard their giant cube vessel as a threat. What are they going to do with the Gorn?
Hundreds or thousands of Gorn on that ship? I don't know.
Yeah. And all they got to do is, like, grab you. Like, how long is... Do we know, because like I've got vague, fuzzy memories of some of the episodes from last season. Do we know how they actually put the eggs inside people? Is it like a very quick procedure? Is it something that they have to have you for a while?
I don't remember.
I don't think they have shown. Because like I looked it up to make sure. I didn't think we'd seen a full-grown Gorn until this episode. In fact, I'm not even sure we still have seen a full-grown Gorn. We just seen a larger one than a juvenile.
Yeah.
But... yeah, it's possible. We still don't know a lot, but that's just some of those things I was wondering about.
I wonder if Mbinga has started mixing up a new batch of the green stuff, because that's their secret weapon against the Gorn.
Yeah.
Forget these phasers and tricorders.
Yeah.
Just getting Bing out there with the green
just
shit.
Just us, just send in the ghost.
Yeah.
Send in the ghost with a couple of vials of green. He's done.
Mm-hmm.
Or I should say the
Give him the chapel.
Done.
They'll fight side by side. Kick some ass.
Hell yeah.
I was literally typing break glass in case of Gorn when the show said it.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
So, yeah. Pretty funny there.
This has been a whole arc of Ortegas like wanting to do the badass pilot mission.
Yeah.
And I thought it's funny that she's like, you know, she has this realization. She's got the happy, scared realization of, oh my God, the Captain Pike's tapping me to do this, but also this is a near suicide mission that would have me disavowed by the Federation if I was caught doing it, you know?
Yeah. You've been in my ear about getting this away mission, you know, here's your chance. And Eric is like, why have I been doing that? Because normally away missions are not this crazy.
What do we think about Pike doing an unauthorized mission that could potentially plunge the entire Federation into a war with a violent, pitiless lizard species?
Oh, it's like, definitely selfish. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I wondered, like, the entire time, it's like, gosh, am I on board with this? Because in principle, I don't like it when you abandon, you know, civilians to being forcefully impregnated and incubating some parasitic lizard thing. But on the other hand, you know, the 100 billion people dying in a war is not great either.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, this is a very Star Trek captain thing to do.
How does Pike not know that the Federation doesn't have a commando team that's trying to do the exact same thing that he's doing and might be impeded by his less experienced crew fucking around? It's just that's the other little thing that's niggling me in the back of my Star Trek head is like, God dang, this particular ship defies orders and goes against the Federation so many times, like multiple times a season. I don't remember that being the case in Star Trek's before, where it's like once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big plot point in the last season of Picard, right? Everybody thought Picard was compromised because, you know, I won't spoil in case you haven't seen it. It's pretty recent, but
two to three seasons Picard directly deal with the Federation being corrupt at the highest levels or compromised at the highest levels.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe rebel against them twice a week, but in this era, I don't know.
But they make it a point of like Picard just kind of does this, right? Picard gets all high and mighty, gets you know an idea in his head about justice and the right thing to do, and goes off and does it regardless. This is a little different because it's personal, right? It's not about like what's right and what's wrong. It's more just about like I want to save my girl.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels a little bit more.
That's the thing. Because if it was
bit
like
more petty, right?
Yeah, if it was Pike, like there's 5,000 Federation citizens, and I'm not going to abandon the torment and death.
Right.
But you do get the idea that this is, yeah, we had a fight about our vacation last episode, and similar with the Spock, like, you know, I didn't like how I left things, and this person's important to me, so fuck everything about Starfleet regulations. We're going in.
Yeah,
I get the. You like Kirk in the original Star Trek was a little bit of a cowboy, but I don't know. I don't know that he deserves that reputation when you've got like guys like Christopher Pike charging around, but maybe with the 10 episode seasons, I have to fit in three times the rebellion, you know, to keep up to the old standards. It's like more concentrated.
Gotcha. I think that makes sense. All right, we kind of talked about this scene where Una can't figure out a way to get to the planet without alerting the Gorn. And Erica says, hey, let's just fly through the debris and we'll look like a piece of debris or whatever. And Pike okays that plan and Erica gets to pilot a shuttle on an away mission. And as we're flying down through the debris field, Erica's hot dogging it, man. She is doing the test pilot thing, which I love the moment where she looks over, like Pike is just, you know, over there heavy breathing, trying to keep his shit together, trying not to throw up or pass out or both. And she's like, looks over, I thought you were a test pilot, man. It's like, yeah, that was a long time ago.
I guess I was a little surprised at how Pike was shocked about it. But I guess they're trying to tell us, you know, Ortega really knows her stuff. She is the real, I mean, if and like they actually had Pike give her an aside, like, damn, Erica, you're the real deal. You really know how to pilot. But I don't know. I can't imagine any kind of Federation test pilot thinking that this was, you know, you might. I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of some of this stuff where it's like, why was the crew grunting like they're pulling a bunch of G's when they're falling towards the planet? And then even if that was a high G maneuver, do they have inertial dampeners or not?
Right. Right. She flipped him off. She was like, we're going into test pilot mode here.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's like it would have been more impressive if she, I don't know, they do something. Because honestly, I would believe that a Federation shuttle could probably decelerate in a safe, like could just literally plummet from the sky and like decelerate in the last 100 feet or so and the crew would survive it. And maybe you even, like, I don't know, use her phaser to shoot the ground. So it's like, because I was expecting that. It's like she's going to, like, do something to simulate an impact. So you know, that's what's going to wig everybody out. But she just pulls out of a really steep dive. Holy shit. But I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how to calibrate your average sci-fi fan versus your average Star Trek fan versus people that have seen The Expanse versus... and make an exciting scene for all those people. I don't know how to do it, but
The Expanse would give a shit about this. Star Trek is just having fun, right? This is supposed to be a scene where it's like, Eric is hot dogging and Pike talked a big game about being a test pilot a couple episodes ago, but now he can't handle the heat, that kind of thing.
But I do think it would behoove this show, if I'm giving constructive criticism, that as pulpy as this show is trying to be, that pulp will go down that much easier if they try to sweat the small stuff.
Oh, for sure. It's a lot like we talked about with the fight scenes in Picard. Like, I didn't hate that fight scenes were happening in Picard. I hated that they were poorly choreographed and very badly edited. If you could just sweat that detail, I wouldn't be thinking in my head while I'm watching this thing, boy, this looks pretty cheesy and bad, and why doesn't this guy just shoot, you know? I'd be thinking about the stakes and what's going on in the fight.
Yeah, instead of trying to replicate your average action movie scene, think about the unique the technology and setting of Star Trek and how you could do something that people haven't even seen before. It might not necessarily be even, like, because I think you could do, like, Ortegas, you know, not explain herself, but just screaming towards the bottom. She fires a small photon torpedo, like a micro torpedo or a phaser. It makes this giant explosion, and it looks to all the world like there's a crater formed. And then you go back and the shuttle's just chilling in the forest and she explains, like, oh, that's her standard, you know, reentry, stealth, blah, blah, blah.
And then she could make the joke about, you know, Pike could be like, they didn't teach that in Academy. Well, that's a long time ago, right?
Like, right. You could, like,
you could still make the same joke.
Yeah, he's not shitting his pants because these are terrifying maneuvers. It's just like, you know, he's an old man and he's not up to date with the latest stuff. So it's like, I don't know.
That maneuver kind of scared the shit out of him right at the end, right?
Because he didn't know. He thought, like, oh my God, maybe she's lost control. We're just not going to pull out of this thing.
Right.
But I don't know. It's a minor nitpick, but I do wish, like you said, instead of trying to ape a fight scene that you saw in a movie that costs $100 million, why not just try to come up with something unique to Star Trek and make that cool?
That's the memorable stuff to me.
Yeah.
All right, let's move over to Spock, who is scanning for life signs on the Cayuga, but not picking anything up. It's not looking great because sickbay was completely destroyed, which they assume that's where Chapel would be. Spock's feeling bad about his last interaction with her being an argument.
It's kind of funny that he's like pinning all his hopes, like, oh, I can't wait till the saucer section spins around and we can see sickbay and it's just gone. That whole section of saucer is just, and like people on the bridge are like, oh my God, it's just gone, Spock. Your girlfriend.
Spock, what do you think about that? There's no way she survived that, huh?
The whole fucking block she lived on's gone, Spock. Ah, what are you gonna do? Yeah, it's
my God. Yeah, good stuff. And then we go back to the planet where Pike's team spots a device that might be the source of the interference field. And there's an incoming Gorn youngling and they test their phasers on it. It works. The phasers kill it. But more incoming, so they hide in a barbershop.
Yeah, to me, this is an inflection point for the Gorn storyline, because either La'an had a singular experience that you cannot fairly extrapolate to all Gorn, or the Gorn are adapting their tactics.
Yeah.
What did you make of the fact that they're saying that that this animal, this Gorn, looks starving, which they're saying, well, it's because it's not found food, which they're trying to make it into, well, that must mean there's no human survivors, because if these things looked fat and well fed, then they're still eating people, but they're skinny, so they're not. What do you think is happening here? Do you have any predictions of?
I mean, they might be telling the story, and this might be the loophole how they get out of the Gorn just, you know, overrunning the Federation, but they might be telling the story of the race starting to die off, or the species, you know, that they're just resource starved, and so they're spreading as fast as they can to try and find more resources and just not finding them. Because I don't think this Midwest town has enough to feed the entire species of the Gorn, you know?
Yeah, 5,000 colonists, I mean... Yeah, like barely even worth it from a reproductive standpoint, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they reproduce so fast and so furious that you imagine it would be hard to feed as many Gorn as there must be, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Does that make sense as far as, like, the future of the Gorn? You know, you encounter one on a planet somewhere sometime in the future.
Well, I was also thinking that maybe there's like a schism within the species, because La'an's talking about how, you know, these immature Gorn fight amongst themselves, like in a survival of the fittest. So only the biggest and strongest Gorn survive. I wonder if there's an offshoot Gorn that it's like trying to be a little bit more cooperative and, you know, like are Gorn scientists, like, is it a problem of Gorn scientists that they use up a host when they're born? Like, are they working on a technology that would allow a host to be, you know, it's like, instead of letting it burst out the chest, what if we beam it out of the chest cavity right as it attains maturity? Then we can put another egg right in this. Like, are they, I just wonder, and if there's some way that maybe they could, with the Federation's help, invent their way out of this kind of vicious life cycle. And then, you know, like, if right now the only way they can reproduce is inside another being's body, like, how are you going to tell a species not to reproduce? Like, that has to be solved, or they're never going to be able to become solid citizens.
Yeah, the challenge there becomes, how do you communicate effectively enough to work together on a solution, right?
Right. But it helps.
Even if you can identify the problems.
It would help if there's a faction within the species that's already, you know, where it's, instead of the Federation going to a unified front, if there's like fractured and like the Federation can support one side, obviously that's easier to do. And then if you're going against the Gorn unified, but we'll see. I just think that they're definitely showing that a person who should know is wrong about a great many things about the Gorn.
Yeah. And it's, it's another one of those scenarios where, like, the Gorn seem to be able to communicate with us at least in some minimal way, right? Like, sending that image of the demarcation line between the empires, that's a communication of sorts. They understand that.
Well, I mean, they're hacking a Federation computer at some point. Like, they definitely have, I mean, they're not unthinking beasts for sure.
Oh, definitely not. But we don't know how to communicate with them. I mean, we could send an image back that we think they might understand.
Do we not know how to communicate, like, with them, or we do not know how to get through to them?
I think it's both. I think we, like, how nobody has come up with a solution for communicating with them, right?
In the sense of, like, they don't understand Gorn language, or it's the extent that they, I'm not entirely sure, because I'm with you. I don't know how the hell the Gorn are able to communicate the idea of a border.
Yeah.
Without being able to understand any kind of speech or transmission. I thought it was
they seem to know something about communication.
I thought it was more like you can communicate with the Gorn. It's just that they are so alien that nothing we say in terms of, like, hey, stop attacking us, or what do you want, or something, like, none of that stuff parses to the Gorn.
Huh. That might be true.
They don't have any leverage, like any species leverage or any inroads to, like, you know, getting any kind of diplomacy started, because the Gorn just doesn't compute to them. But I could be wrong. I don't think
we've ever seen anybody try and communicate with them, right? We've only seen it the one way with this image.
Yeah, but yeah, I suppose. So you think the Gorn just gave a gift to Starfleet with the planet and the moon and just a claw marked scratch between them, and the Federation's like, I think they're trying to discuss a border.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I would love to see a communication session between them and the admirals, right?
They also talk about how they don't know how they communicate with each other because they use these visions. But, like, I don't know that means...
But that might be Enterprise.
That's like saying they haven't cracked the internal communications for Starfleet. That doesn't mean a Starfleet vessel can't be hailed.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, they do send us information at some point, right? Yeah. They do send Starfleet information, that image.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure the Gorn and Kirk's day can just flat out speak. Where the universal translator can understand it. So,
But
that doesn't mean, I mean, this is years before then. So, except Lieutenant Kirk.
Yeah, I don't know. It would be kind of weird seeing one of these alien like creatures speak, I gotta say. Like intelligible words.
Mm.
And I know it wouldn't be like actually intelligible words that they're speaking, it wouldn't be human communication. It would be the universal translator, but it would be real weird. They'd have to just subtitle it, right? Just do the strange noises that they probably make and then subtitle it.
Mm. Yeah, because there's no way.
I don't want to see a Gorn say, hello, how are you today?
Right.
Would be really weird.
How are you finding today, fine sirs? Yeah, with a monocle and a top hat. I agree.
Red alert. Here comes an ad break.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Madman and father of Mad Max, George Miller, is back with another apocalyptic tale from the Australian wastelands.
This time, we're getting a prequel featuring the origin story of Charlize Theron's character Furiosa, starring the Queen's Gambit's Anya Taylor-Joy in the title role, and the mighty Thor Chris Hemsworth as the warlord Dr. Dementis. Furiosa promises more high-octane, slightly radioactive action and fun.
Furiosa drives into theaters on May 24th, and we'll have our spoiler-free thoughts and impressions of the film, as well as a discussion of trailers and upcoming movies for everyone. But if you want to ride with us the full length of the podcast on the eternal highways of Valhalla, shiny and chrome, you're going to have to be a club member.
Join today at support.baldmove.com. Get our full discussion of Furiosa and many more first-run films, plus tons of other bonus podcasts and ad-free feeds.
Support.baldmove.com. Let's boldly go back to the episode. Welcome back to Baldly Go.
So Uhura goes to Pellia to ask for help with the blocked communications. I have no idea what's going on in this scene, and they haven't addressed it, but Pellia's like freaking out and acting weird. Does she know something about the Gorn that we don't? Like, she's actively running away from Uhura here.
Oh,
is it just about the conversation that they had previously? Really?
No,
well, you're the one making it weird then, Pellia.
Here's what I think you're supposed to understand. I think Pellia is busy doing a whole bunch of shit because she's a chief engineer in the middle of a battle, and Uhura comes up with a seemingly unrelated request, and Pellia's like, get out of here, kid. I don't have time for this. And then Uhura says, well, it's this crazy theory. It's probably wrong to bother you. And then Pella takes off because that's exciting to her. She's like, now you're speaking my language. You're talking crazy theory. I'm crazy Pellia. All my theories are crazy. I'm now excited to help you.
This is not my fault. They're getting. The breakdown in communication here is not my fault. It's Carol Kane's.
Yeah, you have a Pellia interference field installed in your chest and your brain, and I don't think you're able to interface correctly with the character.
She is working on an entirely different wavelength that just does not register with me.
Will we ever have peace between the gyms and the Pellias?
We're gonna have to communicate across space with flashlights because I can't with her.
No, but I mean, that's like, they really hammer this point. Like, you know, she, Pellia is just a crazy non-conformist, does whatever she wants. That's why she likes Scotty, because he has all of her strengths and weaknesses, and tends in terms of like not following chain of command and not being kind of disciplined and maybe a little unorthodox. Like they really go out of their way to make her seem like she's this space hippie person.
Yep.
Which, that's her character. I don't know.
It is.
It's like saying the Deep Space Nine writers went out of their way to make Odo like an officious, stuck up his ass shapeshifter guy. And it's like, well, that's kind of what he was. either like it or don't.
Yep. Pike wonders if they can find some other way to deal with the Gorn than fighting them, as he worries about Patel. The Gornlings move on, and they pick up a human life sign down the street.
Yeah, this is where Alon's saying that the Gorns are not adding up. They're out there in a square working together as a hunting party. They should be fighting each other.
Yeah.
And this is where Pike starts to wonder, maybe we're wrong about the Gorn. Maybe there is a way that we, you know, if we don't understand them, this is like proving the Admiral's point.
I feel like the food route is a good way to go, although it's rough because their food is
people,
sentient beings. Because I was thinking, you know, the Federation is on a sort of humanitarian mission here. I don't know if you can call it a humanitarian mission to feed the Gorn if they're in trouble, since you're feeding them humans.
But you could replicate human stock, you know, like you could replicate human meat.
Oh, you could. Feed them just an infinite number of Thomas Rikers. Right?
What if they want... you're like just splitting their reflector transport of beam and just clone everybody. Yeah, sure. So just feed them an army of soulless clones. I was wondering, maybe the replicated meat won't work because it has to be alive. Like, they have to eat it living.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's something about this species and their life cycle and their diet is going to have to change, or the Federation couldn't possibly make peace with them.
Yeah, but all this was in service of, like, could it really be that they're banding together to track down food because the situation is dire? And so it's forced them into cooperation. And maybe they can use that as leverage, right? Well, your situation is so dire, we can force you into cooperation with us.
So the Federation sets into making their situation worse.
Right. Then, but how do you actually deliver anything that they'll see as food without just doing the worst kind of moral calculus.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm curious to see where they go. Because, again, clearly the Gorn are the big bad of this series.
Mm-hmm.
And with this, with them featured in the second episode, I feel like I'm scratching my head more than... I think I compare this to the second appearance of the Borg, which was Best of Both Worlds Part 1, I believe. And Strange New Worlds is coming across wanting in the comparison. This feels more Ferengi, where it's like, oh, geez, we were going to make everything about these guys and just not working.
Yeah, so I don't know. Put them in suits in a casino. Maybe that'll help.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it fair to compare this episode to one of the best episodes or two-part episodes of Star Trek?
I mean, they're baiting it.
Yeah, I think it's fair because of that. Because, yeah, they're inviting that comparison.
And also, that's when the Next Generation got their shit together. Like, I think you look in their terms of polish and where they're at in storytelling. Season 3 comparisons to Season 2 Strange New World comparisons, when you're talking about TNG to Strange New Worlds, I think that's fair.
Okay. So they track down the life sign, which turns out to be Lieutenant Montgomery Scott. Pike asks if anyone else from the Cayuga made it. Scotty takes him to a group of survivors, including Batel, who are hidden in a diner, and he says he can get them back to the Enterprise with the help of Scotty. I thought we were going to have another Newt situation when he's like, are there any survivors? And he starts taking them somewhere. Like, ah, boy. It would be hilarious if it was the same little girl. Like, her parents had taken her to this planet now.
Uh-huh.
And then the Gorn had arrived again, and here she is. Yeah.
I promise, honey, there's going to be no cannibal, bloodthirsty aliens on this planet. Just trust us.
Caesar, she's like, I'm not doing this again. I can't do it again.
Happens again.
You're on your own, kid.
I thought it was funny that they lampshaded the whole officer problem with Star Trek. This is something that people have mentioned. I know you and I have joked about it, that like, where are all of the warrant officers? Where are all of the enlisted ranks? Where are the chiefs? Where are the technicians? Where are the crewmen?
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought that was just like, oh, well, you know, they're... Roddenberry just wasn't super familiar with how these things work. He's trying to make things look like it's a Navy, but it's not really a Navy.
And the show's pretty bridge focused, right?
Yeah, the show's pretty bridge. So you'd think on the bridge you'd have a lot more off of, but you know, people manning the con and right. Working their radar screens are going to be lieutenants and commanders in some cases. Mm-hmm. But I had some time this morning, so I actually decided to research it. And this was a conscious effort by Roddenberry, who in the 60s was modeling Starfleet after what he thought would be an outgrowth of NASA. And like NASA at the time, you didn't have a lot of like sergeants and corporals and whatnot. You had officers because these were highly trained and skilled specialists volunteering to do something dangerous in exploration capacity. And patterned the Starfleet after like NASA and another organization called NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. I guess like every person in NOAA is an officer of some type. And there's very few like petty officers and enlisted ranks like sergeants and things. Because it is an organization drafted out of these institutions, but looking for people that are highly educated with a specific skill set. So, like, yeah, you get the idea that, like, you do have, like, obviously you have Chief O'Brien. It's one of the few enlisted people you can, you know, one of the few bloody men that works for a living in this universe. But by and large, like 90%, 95% of people on Starfleet are commissioned officers from Starfleet Academy because they are an all-volunteer team of explorers, and they all are very highly trained mission technician specialist type of people. I thought that was cool. Something I've wondered about for 30-plus years. Turned out Roddenberry had an answer for it.
That stuff never really registered with me as a kid, right? I don't know anything about naval hierarchies or anything.
Yeah.
So back then I was just like, oh yeah, it always just seems super weird when like a 22-year-old lieutenant would order O'Brien to do something and he had to follow orders. I'm like, wait,
right,
dude, you're like, you've been in Starfleet so much longer than this person. Why does this make any sense? But yeah, with the hierarchy of the the command there, I guess it does make sense.
I'd say it'd be a pretty brave junior grade lieutenant that would just completely ignore what an experienced long-term chief like O'Brien would have to say. But
But it would happen every once in a while.
It can happen.
So
do they ever deal with the fact that did O'Brien go to Starfleet Academy? He probably didn't. Do they ever talk about like when people start talking about the Academy days? It's like I don't know what you're talking about. I enlisted.
I don't remember mentions of the Academy, just like, you know, battles he's fought in and things like that.
I peeled potatoes on the USS Intrepid for like 6 years and then took a correspondence transporter course, and I don't know.
Yeah, I don't recall them ever saying he went to the Academy.
Yeah, and obviously things have changed a lot since Gene. Like, I think, you know, I don't think everyone had in mind all these things, and, like, I don't think it's entirely consistent. But it is an interestingly satisfying answer for why Starfleet is the way it is, I thought.
Yeah, it's cool. How big of a moment was this for you with Scotty showing up? Because I really love Scotty. You know, I'm not super familiar with the original series, but one of the characters that I love the most, it's Scotty.
I thought it was delightful, and I guess I have to say I like it better than how they handled like Kirk and Spock meeting for the first time. They made that into I kind of like the way the show just lets you know, the people that have been around Star Trek for a while and know the original series obviously are going to get super excited seeing Scotty, a proto Scotty. Mm-hmm. But for other people, it's like there's not any of this, like the camera kind of like nudge, that's fucking Montgomery Scott. He's going, like, it just lets you discover that. So it felt like a big moment, but it wasn't played up as a big moment. And I thought that was perfect. But I was pretty excited. Mm-hmm. Like, and I thought, I had in my notes that Jim must be beyond excited because he can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, we're not going to have...
Where we revealed everybody?
Yeah, Pella's not going to be around long if you got Scotty waiting in the wings. Yeah. Her favorite student, her handpicked successor. Like, they are
with,
all
with
but...
no ship, I mean, he's got to go somewhere, right? And this usurper... Yeah. To the chief engineer position, like let's not forget she defied Starfleet orders, stole the Enterprise, and just declared herself chief engineer.
That's why Pike hired her. He likes the cut of that jib, man.
I don't think he can just hire her. I think she's on deck. She's like, she's gonna be replaced
at
the drop of
chief
a hat.
Engineer. No, seriously, when Scott showed up, I just metaphorically saw her like in the airlock. With Akiva Goldsmith on the cycle button, his finger on the cycle button. Like, no, she's not long for the Star Trek world, I don't think. Maybe next season as a transition. But how do you feel about it? I thought like that this calculus must have been going through your head. No way. It couldn't have.
No, I don't know why. Maybe there was
you
an
didn't
interference,
think
a Scotty
the new
interference
engineer?
Field.
Ah.
No, I don't know what happened, but my brain was not
Gordon
operating on the Scotty level.
Right up your ass. And it's just... interfere with the whole is this a chief engineer scattering field you just can't handle until and
but I was not thinking about that. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. Now I'm excited. Now I'm ready to go. Let's get Scotty in there. Come on,
what
man.
Did you think
pinch
of this
hit.
Scotty.
Get her out of here.
You know, you got the
Simon
original
Pegg.
You got the Simon Pegg version. I'm not familiar if there's been tons of Scotties in the lore.
I mean, those are the only two I know, James Doohan and Simon Pegg.
Yeah, how do you think you stacked up to Jimmy and Simon?
He feels a lot like, I don't know. I mean, Simon Pegg did a great job too. I have a little bit of Scotty fatigue, I guess, with like reintroducing a new Scotty every 10 years now. But yeah, I think he's a very good Scotty. It's a strong start for him, right? I the thing I like about Scotty so much is the humor that he brings to everything he does, right?
Yeah.
The good humor and also the laughs. And this Scotty kind of nailed it. He seems like a, you know, he's not overly optimistic. He's not naive, but he's very like gung-ho about the engineering and he's joyful in what he's doing.
Resourceful,
and also
too.
He's kind of funny as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think the show has not missed yet on casting. I thought they might have whiffed with Kirk last year, but I think he's turning into just a fine Kirk. I love Uhura. Love their Spock. I think this is a strong Scotty. Makes me really excited to get I don't know, maybe because like it'd be tough to replace Sulu with Ortegas because I like Ortegas so much.
Ooh, yeah, not
because I was trying to think, it's like getting excited about Chekhov and Sulu, and like they haven't really done much with the person sitting beside Ortegas, but I like Ortegas enough that like seeing Sulu show that, I hope they save that for the end of the series.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I assume they're going to eventually assemble the entire old crew of the Enterprise, right?
Yeah.
You're going to get
And also,
off,
like, this isn't the show's hanging. It isn't what it hangs its hat on, either. Like, these are just kind of, like, bonuses to getting. It's not like, oh, this is the episode where Kirk meets Spock. Ooh, this is the episode where we're going to see Scotty. They didn't even advertise it as such. It's just like, this is what the show's doing because it's this show at this time era. But it's very confident that it's not relying on these to, like, keep people engaged.
Yeah, so one of the things during this episode that was always in the back of my mind that was kind of dampening my excitement for it was the fact that we know Chapel can't die, right?
Yes.
Because I think they're telling a story that leads directly to the original series. So Chapel cannot die. And I'm like, well, they're really slow playing whether Chapel is okay or whatever. And I guess that's for the benefit of the other characters, or not the benefit, to the detriment of the other characters. They're worried about her, so that's fine. But you
also
have a situation with this crew here that we're getting to know and love where you could kill any one of them at any time because it makes perfect sense. None of them are in that original series, right? At least
it would be
Spock,
a moment.
You can't kill Spock. You can't kill Chapel. But those are the only two. Uhura, rather. But you have a lot of characters you could kill. You could kill Una. You could kill Erica. You could kill... they already did kill Hammer, right? Like, you could kill Mbenga. Lon, I think that provides an interesting opportunity for me to feel real fear for some of these characters that you don't always get in a Star Trek.
Especially since they killed one last year. Like, I was fucking shocked. That was one of the things that, like, really cemented me in liking this series was that I thought that was a ballsy, gutsy move that they killed Hammer.
Mm-hmm. And they could do that with, like, 80% of the bridge crew here.
Yeah. Oh, bonus Himmer meme, by the way. Did you know that he was the lead Klingon in the Klingon boy band last week?
The guy who plays him? Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that. I saw an email and it was very like vague and coded, like, oh, you guys might want to look up who played him or whatever. And I did. And I was like, oh, Himmer. Nice.
Yeah. It's funny that they got him in as zombie Himmer. And then they got when he came in for the studio that day, like, hey, you got another 60 seconds or so to get into a costume and a green screen booth for us? Because,
well, I'm sure he had to learn the choreography and the song. It probably was more than 60 seconds.
It wasn't exactly light work, but, you know.
No. But I know what you mean. It's like, yeah, and we got this other thing for you.
Yeah, I'm digging it. I hope they keep on finding ways to bring him back.
So let's go over to Scotty telling them how they came into contact with the Gorn due to coronal mass ejections, and they speculate that the Gorn might be sensitive to certain light patterns. Scotty then tells them how he managed to evade the Gorn in his shuttle by building a Gorn transponder to make it look like a Gorn ship. Pike asks if he can build another, but he needs a particular sensor array or something.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I was wondering if, like, Gorn hatched out of the stars. They're talking about, like, coronal mass ejections. I'm like, were they ejected out of the star here?
Dude, I was wondering the same thing. It's like, this sounds good, but how in the hell could this possibly affect a species that would evolve, you know?
And one that has starships and stuff. Like, you don't coronally eject from a star with a starship, right?
But if that subtly changes the light from the star and that's somehow intrinsic to their like mating and reproductive and feeding cycles, like I could. And so they don't it's even working on an instinctual level. Like, they don't even understand it themselves. They just know that they see a star with these things and they're attracted to it. But it's something that, you know, Pike realizes is something that they could use as leverage over them. It might be something they could use to manipulate them. In other words, against the Gorn. Yeah, and like you also got Sam here to say, oh, you know, a certain locust swarm when there's certain environmental conditions. So there you got, I think it all makes sense.
Yeah, you know, like certain fish seek warmer waters to lay eggs, things like that.
Sure.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then we go over to Mbinga on the planet, who's attending to the wounded. Erica helps him as they worry about Chapel. This is a nice scene. You know, they're both very worried about her, but they've got, you know, a job to do in the meantime, and they're working on figuring it out. So let's try and just focus on the job ahead, right?
It's cute, the idea that the Chapel's got to kill their Ortegas impersonation. You know, it's just, sure, like I said, it's a little gentle scene of characters we don't see interacting with each other very often about a mutual character that they do interact with a lot. So it was good. It's good. I can't think of many times I've seen Ortegas and Mbinga kind of like, you know, level with each other.
Yeah, they're really done a good job this season of reinforcing like the friendships between some of these bridge crew, or not even bridge crew. I mean, Chapel's not bridge, but the character relationships here. I really feel like Chapel and Erica just kind of hang out. You know, they like each other. They're good friends. Yeah. They have a lot of fun together.
Yeah,
I didn't like get that a ton from other Star Treks, where I think like, oh, you know, these people just really hang out and have fun, you know?
Yeah, like there's Worf and Geordi and Beverly never. Like Beverly and Crush, no. Or Beverly and Picard and Beverly and Troy.
And maybe Riker and anybody really. I mean, he could get along with anyone.
Yeah, but like you're right. There was a little clickier.
Yeah, and a little more like at arm's length kind of thing. They're not.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like they were spending a ton of time off duty just hanging out.
Yeah.
And this show's done a good job with that. These feel a lot more like people in their off time.
Agreed.
So on the Enterprise, they detect more hunters warping in. Uhura says they found where the interference field is coming from, and they want to destroy it without starting a war by causing the saucer section of the Cayuga to fall on it. And Spock volunteers to go out and place the rocket, the booster rockets on the Cayuga wreckage. I see a big problem with a lot of the stuff that's happening here.
Yeah.
So there's one good problem. The one thing they set up as very tense that they don't even really deal with. There's a huge piece of debris, the saucer section of the Cayuga, that they want to drop onto this tower. And this tower is very close to this town. Within viewing distance.
No, it's on the opposite side of the world, right?
Is it?
Or you're right, because they had to be able to walk. Because
they go
there.
To the shuttle. Yeah,
No. You're right. You're right.
The shuttle, which is very close to where it crashes.
Yeah. No. You're right. You're right.
I just think
I thought there's a line of dialogue that said it was on the opposite side, but I think that's just because it's opposite side of the Enterprise, because the Enterprise couldn't directly observe it.
Right. Right. Right.
It wasn't on the opposite side of the town. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The demarcation line, yeah. Gotcha. So they're dropping this massive piece of debris onto a location that's very close to this town. They don't really play with that. I expected them to, you know? And they can't warn them, right? They can't say, hey, this is incoming, because they have no communications until they do the thing.
No, I was...
Huge tension there that they just ignore.
I thought it
ignore.
Was wild that Pike and company survived the impact, because we see how close it
in
is when
shuttle,
it came
yeah.
down. And I forgot that I was thinking that, oh, well, the town is a half a planet away, and like, well, the shuttle's probably hardened, right? You know, like
sure,
the Scott can get some kind of like minimal shields working and all that. But like, yeah, you ain't gonna fucking shield the Five and Dime. You're gonna shield the 50s diner that
right.
had no
and
power. Was
it's so
soaked in
compelling.
Blood. Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing that shocked me, is they do nothing with what I thought was a huge point of a huge problem for them.
Yeah,
like,
the
how
energy,
do you communicate, get the hell out of the way, you know?
The energy that thing would deliver to the ground target is,
yeah,
I mean, insane.
And they don't know where the people are? It's just like this huge thing that I was like, oh, the dramatic possibilities here are amazing.
Yeah.
Wah, wah. They do nothing with it. The other thing here is their whole plan is predicated on the idea that they don't want to start a war. They don't want the Gorn to know that they're trying to blow up this tower until it's too late, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, you know, they'll think it's a naturally decaying orbit. Dude, they came here in fucking spaceships. They have spacesuits. They're an intelligent thinking species.
Yeah.
They're going to know that orbits don't decay like this. They're in a fucking orbit. They know how to establish orbits, and they know what orbits do. You're not going to trick them into thinking this thing smashing to the Earth or to the ground is a naturally decaying orbit. Come on.
Later in the episode, Spock will be able to detect residual transporter signals that conclusively show the Gorn stole all of the Federation colonists, but the Gorn are not going to be able to detect this giant gravitational disturbance that knocked the...
It's veering off of its natural orbit to smash.
And I thought maybe they would use like a tractor beam or something, that, but like they say that they're going to put retro rockets on it. So it's like,
and they do. Yeah.
I would think that would be, and it wasn't subtle either. It wasn't like it just slowly decayed. It's just like it was sitting there and all of a sudden it just accelerates to the ground.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to notice this. They're going to know who did it.
I'm starting to think this is a pulpier episode, or maybe they're all this pulpy. They just don't ever have to like give so many multi overlapping trectobobble bullshit explanations for things that we can kind of tear apart. Because I'm starting to think the science part of the writing is a little rough on these. But
and I mean, there's a much easier way to do this, right? Have somebody suggest this, be like, the Gorn are going to notice that this is, that we're doing something here. And they say, just have a character say something like plausible deniability, you know, or what are they going to do about it?
Yeah, because that's the thing. There's a lot of things like in, because this is like a Tom Clancy book, you know, where the United States is fucking with Russia back in the 80s. And there's a lot of things
and
you can do. The crude things is like, you just make sure the other side can't prove it.
Yeah.
They can suspect all they want, but unless they can go to the UN and be like, Jacques Hughes, it's not going to matter to a whole lot. Like, you know, you got to be able to send a Gorn ambassador to the Federation to be like, look, we had his demar. But they didn't. Now, to their credit, I think this pays off. I think the reason the hunter ships go and attack the Enterprise is because the jig is kind of up. And more to your point, I think they should have said, it's like, look, we're going to have maybe a minute when this thing hits the tower before the Gorn realize what we're up to. And we have to have all our ducks in a row. Spock, you got to be on the sensors. You got to be ready to beam people up. We got to have shuttles standing on. And they didn't really do, they had that scene where like Pike's like, check again, check your scanners again. But I thought they could have lampshaded it a little bit better to be like, of course the Gorn aren't idiots. They're going to know, but we're going to have a gap in the confusion and also prove it. You know, how do you know you didn't fuck something up, or you didn't get too close?
Oh, you're
going to
search that debris for retro rockets or whatever?
Right.
Good luck. They disintegrated, you know?
Right. And it's 5,000 colonists. Are we really? And you probably killed half of them anyway. We're really going to go. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like it feels more like real politic than just the other side assuming the other team is just stupid and incompetent and helpless.
Yeah. Even though they arrived in spaceships.
Yeah.
Shields up. Here come the ads.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
At ease, Ensigns. Welcome back to Baldly Go. So back in the diner, Pike goes to... tries to go out to find Scotty's shuttle, but Patel catches him leaving and decides to come with him. Scotty overhears and also decides to come along, and Pike tosses him a pistol, which will be important later.
Classic. Classic, you know. Tossed a nervous brainy guy again.
Yeah. Didn't result in anybody's death, so that's a success. On the Cayuga, Chapel wakes and gets life support working for at least an hour. She sees the Enterprise floating outside the window and attempts the world's most desperate and pathetic SOS with her flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they could see this, but you're really relying on Uhura here to... it's not even Uhura, right? It would be Spock, but he's out. Like, he's the guy who would probably observe the SOS, yeah?
Yeah, so just they say got observing, some they don't have just, like, you know, people looking at the windows, right? They probably have the Enterprise high-resolution cameras scanning for things like that. Yeah.
I would assume. But I guess Una doesn't know how to operate those or something.
I mean, you're right. There was surprisingly little drama here because it's like... I guess, how many... Percentage-wise, how many fans of Star Trek Strange New Worlds have seen the original series? Maybe they've seen the movies. But I'm talking about, like, seeing all, you know, like, know who Nurse Chapel is, know that she's a part of the series, know, you know, about the Menagerie episode and the Christopher Pike of it. Like, would you even think 50% of Strange New Worlds fans has that stuff on tap?
That's going to be my guess, because I'm sure there are a lot of old school fans watching this. I know a bunch do, so... Maybe 50.
I mean, we're talking 50, 60 years ago when this stuff came out. So, yeah, 50% seems high to me. So,
yeah,
this didn't work, you know, in the wreckage. Oh, of course, is Chapel still alive? But I wonder if there are some people who this stuff really works on because they have no fucking frame of reference.
Maybe. Maybe so. I'm not even sure I would remember Chapel because I've seen a scant few episodes of TOS if it weren't for this podcast. So.
And were it not for my dad being a big science fiction fan, I don't know that I think I would have gotten into Star Trek The Next Generation because I was into space shows in general, but I don't think I would have gone back and watched this old one. Yeah. You know, like, but this is what happened when I was like 7 to 10 years old, had my dad not been into it. So, yeah, and you're just like a couple years older than me or a couple years younger than me. So you completely missed it.
Yeah, my dad was not into it. So.
So I guess they do. It's like, because sometimes I like roll my eyes when they have like Chapel underneath a thing of debris. Like, come on, come on.
Yeah.
But I guess, yeah, probably more than half the people. This is a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Spock lands on the Cayuga hull and starts attaching boosters. Can I just say I hate saying the word Cayuga. I always feel like George's boss from Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. Cayuga.
Yeah, no,
it's the worst name. I hate it.
It feels weird. Like, I feel like I'm constantly mispronouncing it, even though I'm not. At least I'm pronouncing it the same way the show is. But yeah, Cayuga is a very... It sounds like an onomatopoeia for a giant, like, car horn.
Yeah, for an air
Cayuga,
horn or something.
Cayuga, you know?
Yep. Anyway, Spock flies past Chapel's window, which, boy, that's a coincidence, huh? But she can't get his attention, so she grabs an EV suit off the wall.
Well, half the windows that he could have floated by that she wouldn't be that are gone. So, like, it's a Monty Hall problem. You're you metaphorically open half the doors on a ship, so it's twice as likely for it to happen.
It's true.
Can I say something that, like, yeah. I know they invented transporters just because Gene Roddenberry's like, there's no fucking way we're gonna have spacesuits, and even I don't even have the money to show a shuttlecraft this season, so we gotta have ways to get people to and from planet. and to and from ships and all that stuff, easy peasy. So the transporter was invented. Having said that, it's super cool that Star Trek now can actually put their dudes in spaceships and send them outside the hull. Like, there's so many times in the original series and the Next Generation that the crisis of the day could have been averted by going to the nearest locker, getting into emergency suit, and, you know, and it's so cool that we got the budget where you can pull off this that I think compares favorably to some of the spacewalk scenes we've seen in The Expanse before.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it just him going through that debris field with his spacesuit, you know, silently through, and I just thought it was super cool.
And it's something they don't do very often in Star Trek. I feel like it's
and they shouldn't, because they do have shuttles and transporters.
The only time they should really do it is when they need to do something manually, like repair the hull or something on the outside of the ship, right?
Yep, or do something sneaky commando-like in this case, yeah.
Yeah, First Contact has a great scene on the, external
the taking
part
of the
ship.
The battle of the deflector ship, the deflector dish.
I love that, with Worf out there with his fucking palette or whatever, chopping up Borg on the outside of the ship. I forget what he's doing out there, but
yeah, and he's got that sweet thing where he what do you call that? He puts a tourniquet on a spacesuit to keep from bleeding out air
with the Borg's
this.
With the Borg's hose, right? It's like one of the hoses off.
Tied it off with one of Borg's conduit. It's so sweet.
That always felt special to me when they went out on the hull, and it was the first time. Did that ever happen in TNG?
Yeah,
it's like the first time
TNG.
I remembered it happening. Okay.
Not in TNG, but it does happen in Star Trek VI. The use of spacesuits and spacewalking and this is a big part of the plot in the beginning. But you're right.
Yeah. It felt like a big moment to me, and that was cool.
And I don't think they should overuse it, but I'm glad that this is something they have in a tool bag.
So Pike's group reaches Scotty's shuttle and they find a Gorn waiting for him. Also, we're kind of doing, dueling Gorn here, right? On our way out of the ship, Chapel spots Gorn in her path. And then the Gornling and Scotty shuttle takes a look at the three humans and leaves, which is interesting. Pike wants to know why. Patel brushes it off, but it bothers Pike as Scotty gets to work on the transponder. I already knew.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I was completely oblivious to the Carol Kane Pelia stuff and Montgomery Scott stuff. I was not tuned into that wavelength, but Patel being infected. Oh yeah.
I thought she was going to reveal that she is keeping some secret from Pike, like she was in some kind of elite anti-Gorn task force and she's got some kind
of... Oh my God.
Yeah, I didn't see her actually, but that made perfect
Gorn
sense,
pheromones,
right?
Or some shit.
Yeah. That they've got some kind of secret weapon against them.
She turns to him. That's my ex. I'm sorry. I meant to tell you before. That's my ex. We don't speak anymore.
I thought that they might be paying off the kind of like you don't trust me storyline in that way, but it's more of like not showing your zombie bite kind of trust that they're paying off.
Yeah.
What do you think this Gorn was up to on the Cayuga, up in some Jeffrey's tube inputting command codes?
It could be reconnaissance, right? It could just be, let's get some information from their ship while we have the opportunity. I don't know. They're putting their own retro rockets on it to boost it at the Enterprise.
At the Enterprise, so they could plausibly say, I didn't know that the fucking debris was going to leave orbit and crash into that ship. Yeah.
It's naturally decaying orbit.
Apparently,
we
don't know how orbital mechanics works according to Federation, so prove us wrong, fuckers.
Right.
We just dumb fuck lucked our way into space. Yeah, I don't know, but they show him doing something, and it's just a single Gorn. You think if this was like an official thing that they have a team of Gorn trying to like break it down and learn all the technology and steal all the secrets, but it didn't seem like it was hunting for survivors. It was actually trying to do something. Again, there all these weird Gorn behaviors. What's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. Part two, I'm sure we'll get more information. And seeing the Gorn in spacesuits, I thought was super interesting too, right? Like, I don't know why, but for some reason, I think it's one thing to have spaceships that you can travel in. It's another thing to have spacesuits, but they go hand in hand, right? They have to. It's just Star Trek has trained me, like, they're not necessarily going to show spacesuits just because we show spaceships.
Although I would thought it would be super bad if you had a species that could survive like an hour or two as in jaunt in space. And I feel like the Gorn maybe, like, yeah. I could see a Gorn surviving that oxygen because they're cold-blooded for, you know, and...
Apparently not.
Yeah, they probably have some kind of membrane covering their eyes, so don't have to worry about their eyes freezing over and... Now, they would have, like, long-term, you'd have to worry about the heat loss, but, you know, it's a lot easier to have, like, you could just have essentially a spacesuit version of a thermal blanket, you know, that you just to have a battery-operated heating blanket that would keep them
sure.
going. But yeah,
Mylar tracksuit. Why not? Let's get these corn.
Because I think that's always, looking like, good. When you see someone walking around, it's always a badass moment when you see something walking around in space without a spacesuit on, right? You're like, holy
yeah,
fuck.
Yeah, the protomolecule stuff. Was fucked in the
perfect
expanse,
example.
Right?
Perfect example. Yeah, it's those implied hybrids. That Whew. The aliens and the movie Alien can survive, and like
it is
that one that Sigourney blew out the airlock didn't seem like it was in super distress until the engine hit it. So I always think that's when I first saw it, it wasn't clear to me that it was wearing a spacesuit. In fact,
yeah,
it might
here.
Not be. It might just be wearing a helmet like with the seals around its neck.
Maybe.
Because that tail yeah, did not look like it had a suit on it. That looked like just a tail.
Yeah. There's a gasket on the tail. The tail that's unaffected by space.
Yeah, it's right. Yeah, why would it be?
But yeah, Spock finishes attaching the boosters, but he's spotted by Gorn. Chapel arrives in the room and they battle Gorn together. It's about to kill Spock. Chapel manages to distract it so Spock can puncture its faceplate, and it decompresses out into space and dies.
Yeah, so, it's yeah. That's sometimes I feel like people make things more exciting than need to be. I've noticed this in the last couple of weeks. There's been a couple shows where it's like, God, I wish you would just stop one. The scene of like Chapel like bumbling towards the phaser in slow motion. Boy, it really about caused me to have a stroke. I'm like, just pick up the fucking gun. Pick up the fucking... Oh my God, you trip. How the hell do you trip in zero gravity? But it's like nothing interesting happens. It's not like she doesn't get the gun, has to do something else. It just takes her slightly longer. It lets the Gorn get slightly more cracks in the fucking but she just shoots the Gorn. Like stop fucking around with this shit. It completely bleeds the tension of these scenes, I feel like, in my opinion.
Yeah, let me ask you, what exactly is going on here with her hooking her foot on this rail? So does she not have thrusters? So my guess here is that she does not have thrusters. She's just in an EV suit.
Yeah, like a survival suit.
Yeah, and if she were to like jump at this thing to grab it real fast, she would fly out into space and be lost, and Spock would die, and then she would probably die of asphyxiation.
If she chose her vector wrong, you know, out the nearest bulkhead, yeah, that would happen, I think.
Which she's like right next to the opening where there is nothing beyond that, right? So
yeah,
I kind of get it. She needs to just sort of stretch.
What you're saying,
and
it would be even
cooler
if she kept on floating, turned around and coolly blasted this guy, since she has combat experience.
It would be. And then knowing that Spock could then fly out and save her
and get her. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she would be putting her life in Spock's hands too, at the same time, because if Spock is unable to take advantage of the moment that she's going to give him,
it's a trust.
She knows she's dead. Yeah.
It's a little of a trust. Yeah, I think we just both in 30 seconds wrote a more interesting version of this action scene. But we did get you consider how effective it is to see Chapel awkwardly balancing on top of a railing, butterfingering a phaser for 30 seconds while the man she kind of sort of loves is dying.
And have you considered that the music isn't quite at the crescendo level we want it to be yet? And we need to delay.
Right. You haven't quite got the full Gorn anthem going. Yeah,
people might not have recognized it yet. Anyway, I don't know. I did think it was a cool scene. I enjoyed like seeing Spock being just totally overpowered by this Gorn. There's nothing like humans, Vulcans, nobody is prepared to fight this thing without the green shit, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like I always, you know, I think Vulcans are like roughly twice as strong as a human, and like you know, Klingons a little bit stronger than that. So yeah, when you, it's like yeah, when you see Spock batted around, that's code for like every single other person on the bridge crew would do worse one on one, and he has no, like he is just being ragdolled by this thing, by just its tail. It's not even got a chance to get his claws into him.
And this is an enhanced phaser, right? Because this is a phaser that Spock brings with him.
Surely.
So this
surely he
bounces
wouldn't bring,
right off although, that full-grown Gorn.
I actually wonder if it was. Why would they, like, wouldn't Pike, it's not like he had cases and cases of this thing. Like, wouldn't Pike bring the stuff he had down to the landing party?
It's not like he has a replicator to replicate cases
That's
and
true.
Cases of these things.
True. There's a Starfleet order saying you can't. You can't. This is limited technology. It hasn't gotten every ship yet. Well,
they
can't
don't
we
have
just
the pattern
replicate?
For
nope.
it. It's under lock and key at the Daystrom Institute or some shit. I don't know.
Like the Daystrom has an exclusive patent. It'll expire 75 years after Daystrom dies.
Right. And even then, Daystrom Incorporated is going to fight it.
Right, right. One of his children filed an extension patent, so it's probably going to be closer to 115 years plus life.
Mm-hmm. So we just got to hold the Gorn off until then.
Yeah, yeah.
With our regular ass phasers. Anyway,
he's doing this for no money, by the way, because we live in a communist society. Right. He's cornering the market on Gorn technology and patenting it just to be an asshole. He's not getting extra money.
So down in Scotty's shuttle, Pike demands to know why the Gorn ran away, and Patel shows him that she's full of Gorn eggs, just overflowing with Gorn eggs. Apparently happened yesterday. I guess she fucked this Gorn.
Oh,
this
so
is her
much.
Ex. They had one final tryst.
Mm. That's why she ran him off at the stair. He's like, I'm just not. I don't have time for this. Don't have time for this drama.
It's an affair, not an attack. That's what I think happened.
Right. How many?
We're on a break. Look, you said we
it's
wanted
true.
A break.
True.
My ex shows up. What am I going to do? Right? Not get impregnated with his eggs?
Not put his eggs inside of me. How many Gorn eggs does the average person? I thought it was like a onesie kind of thing. Is it multiple eggs?
No, I'm just making jokes, but
because I thought she said I've been infected with Gorn. I thought she said eggs plural too, but
did she even say eggs? I don't know. Maybe.
Oh right, she just I actually couldn't tell
you
what the exact word
it
was.
Bulging veins in her wrist or whatever.
Sure. Because like a Gorn egg infection just murdered your skin.
Oh yeah. So then Chapel and Spock hold hands in space. That's kind of that whole scene. It is a beautiful shot, though.
Yeah,
Cayuga is falling to the planet.
Yes.
Excuse me, not falling. The Gorn think it's falling. It's
sure.
actually being thrusted toward the planet.
Yeah, and it's catching on fire. It's a cool shot. Like you said, I think it's one of the standout shots of the episode.
Especially having just, you know, saved each other, right? I mean, they both saved each other in this scene. They both were feeling bad about the way they left things. That could have been the final resting place for their relationship if one of them had died. And, you know, they've gotten a second chance here.
Counterpoint. Does this actually make things better, or does this actually, in the long term...
It probably means we're going to see more of Spock and Chapel, which is not my favorite part of the show, certainly, but...
Well, I'm just saying, like, just from a character standpoint, does this do anything helpful? Because it's not like all of the, you know, she's still going to go away. I don't know. Maybe Spock. Because I think it's all in Spock's. Like,
Nurse
Chapel's been trying to get a fellowship this whole season. As soon as he says, hey, I'm free, and he comes running to her, he thinks she's just going to abandon all of her goals and stuff that she set for herself. And
yeah, that's ridiculous.
But I did wonder because, like, you know, it's like this is sweet and everything, but it doesn't solve any of the problems unless she's going to give up her dreams or unless he's going to become a lot less conventional.
Which, like I said last episode, she apparently gives up her dreams, ends up as the nurse on Enterprise. So,
yeah, we got some interesting feedback about Chapel's arc that I mean, because like I said, I'm aware of Nurse Chapel, but I don't know that she actually had some, like, you know, juicy roles in the old series. And. They're already laying tracks towards that, but we'll get to that in the wrap up because I don't think tell we're not gonna have time to do this feedback this week. We're gonna have to.
Yeah, it's a long episode.
It's long an episode. It's over an hour. Supersized two part finale.
So Batel tells Pike she's not going back to Enterprise. She's going to sacrifice herself to destroy the Gorn interference device. He pleads with her to find another way, but it's all moot because the saucer of the Cayuga comes crashing down on the tower before they can resolve who's going to do what.
I like Batel saying that it's like, what's what? Himmer did it. No one had a problem with that. And it's like, well...
Oh, we all had problems with it, right?
Yeah, I was about to say, I was, we're still I was dealing kind of broken up that. About it. Yeah, yeah.
And then they call Pike from the Enterprise, like, calls down to Pike. Pike doesn't sound rattled at all, right? He's yards away from a saucer landing on a planet, not landing, crashing, smashing down onto a planet, and he does not get phased one bit.
Yeah, maybe it wouldn't be as big a deal as I'm thinking. I'm trying to think of, like, how far away, if you dropped an aircraft carrier from space, how far away would you have to be before that's not, like, a big, you know,
because my pulse doesn't raise and my breathing gets a little heavy. Damn far. Like,
I guess
almost
you're
out
right.
of sight.
But you're not a starship captain that's been through some violent, true, crazy shit before. So I was just trying to think of, like, you know, physically, what would be the energy delivered? Because the other thing is, a lot of the, you know, it's like, you don't need a very big meteor to hit the Earth to make a surprising impact. But that's because they're going very, very fast relative to the Earth. So it's like, this was in orbit, and it's, I don't know. Maybe this is more survivable than I think. But the writers haven't really given me the confidence that they've got the old protractor and slide rule out and done some math on it. So,
yeah.
What they showed seemed hellish. It seemed hellish to be. It seemed like it'd knock you on your ass and deafen. You know, kind of like the Oppenheimer bomb test scene in the Oppenheimer movie. Spoilers for Oppenheimer. They actually set off a bomb. You'd think that they'd be rolling around on the ground holding your eyes and your ears for a bit.
Uh-huh. But no. He's like, beam me up, Scotty. Or...
yeah.
Pelia or whoever beams people up on this ship. Before we had Scotty,
Chief O'Brien, who's actually the grandfather of the Chief O'Brien we know. This is run, the transporting runs in their blood.
Uh-huh. But he's
literally, they've been transported so much it's permanently altered their DNA.
And with the interference device destroyed, Enterprise beams Spock, Chapel, Pike, and Patel aboard. Spock tries to apologize to Chapel, but she tells him to save it. And not in a malicious way. She's just like, no, we'll talk about it. Right. Batel goes to sickbay where Chapel puts her in stasis. Scotty's introduced to his former teacher, Pelia, to work on the Gorn transponder with her.
Her best student received some of her worst traits. I don't like Apella, but I also think that, like, you know, this just kind of shows her as pretty self-aware. Like, I get it. I get that I'm a lot. I get that I'm non-conventional. I get that that's problematic. Here's a guy that epitomizes that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he strikes me like the guy who doesn't like to do homework and exams, right? He's more interested in, I just want to do experiments. I'm going to get my hands on stuff.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's got bad grades. There are a couple of solutions here. So what they're going to do with Batel is they're going to put her into some kind of stasis, but it's only like a mental stasis, it seems. Like, her body is still operating. I feel like they've got two options. A, Mbinga can come in there and say, what the fuck are you doing? Get her in the transporter buffer right now until we figure this out.
I taught you better than this, Christine.
Uh-huh. And Christine's like, yeah, we tried that once and I had to kill that person. So what now? Or potentially, if you want to do a callback to earlier in the season, they could take her to the entities that turned Spock human and say, remove this Gorn shit. Although I don't think they would do it.
Yeah, especially since those entities, you'd be like, we didn't fucking put the Gorn shit in there. Like, what the hell? Are you trying to use our warranty package on non-warrantied work? This is not... yeah, I don't like this. Yeah, I'm thinking it's the Mbinga solution, though, right? That's the obvious. And because it's obvious when they put her into stasis that it's not slowing the infection down as much as they want. You can visibly see it grow after she's placed in stasis. So, and right before she's put in, she makes Chapel swear like an oath that, like, look, if you can't stop this thing, you got to take me out because I ain't going to be no baby Gorn incubator.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I wouldn't want to either.
Maybe she'll get distracted by a conversation with Spock, and Batel will have a chest burster burst out of her, and now they've got Gorn behind enemy lines here.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
For the next episode, Gorn.
I don't have any special affection for Batel. I actually don't particularly like this will they, won't they with Pike and her.
Sure.
Pike's already a distracted figure that makes questionable command choices and whatnot. I don't think he needs a romantic entanglement. I think there's been at no time have I ever felt like the plots have been improved by their bullshit. So
as much as we talk about Kirk being a bit of a stretch, him being around constantly, although they're finding good ways to do that, this feels even more so. Like every other episode, they have a run-in with the Cayuga where they're able to connect Patel and Pike.
Which I get it. They're probably in the same, you know, probably under the same command structure with Admiral April and they're dating. They've got, you know, they're captains of their vessel with a wide latitude on where it goes. So I'm sure that, but you're right. It's another entanglement that like, I don't think the show needs, especially like I said, I think that
maybe
Pike could concentrate on what's going on with his own ship for a while.
Yeah, and it's clearly compromising him, right? I mean, I think he is able to make this choice a lot quicker without Batel in the situation.
Yeah, 100%.
So more Gorn warp in as Enterprise tries to beam the survivors aboard. They're too late, as the Gorn have already beamed them up to their ship. Enterprise is attacked by Gorn fighters. Admiral April tells them to withdraw. Pike is forced to make a call. And we'll have to wait at least a year to find out what he decides, because it's to be continued, or maybe longer with the strike. You never know.
Exactly. And the Enterprise getting the stuffing kicked out of it. And again, not a fan of Pike sitting there for a good 30 seconds, letting his ship get rocked. And he's just sitting there at the stunned look on his face like he can't.
Yeah, somebody needs to relieve him because he's compromised.
I tried because we've gotten a lot of feedback about like, what the fuck is wrong with Pike? He's letting his junior officers fire at mining platforms without his approval. And, you know, he's letting this happen. And I was thinking, and I said something, there's some discourse I started on Twitter, but I was like, you know, if you think of Captain Pike through the lens of someone who knows he's going to die and probably is sparing at least a little bit of a thought to like, how can I best get my crew to be ready for my absence, and they can still like he's delegating a lot more and letting them take the lead on a lot more. It's like maybe his command decisions make a little bit more sense when you think about that. But like here, this is just I don't know, they're consistently writing Pike as kind of weak and indecisive. Like you cannot sit there and gasp like a landed fish on a pier while your ship is getting obliterated by carnivorous lizards, dude. You got to fucking, and especially when your first officer is sitting there like, Captain, can I get a command decision? Captain, in fact, it makes Una look bad. I think 5 seconds in, Una should have been started barking orders because our captain's blue screened, and that's why you have a second a first officer. So like, I think you guys have heard, I was a little annoyed by this finale episode. Like I didn't hate it. But I could have liked it a hell of a lot more, and there could have been a hell of a lot more tension if they had just, I don't know, it's like all of the show's faults that are not huge and glaring, and they're entirely overpowered by the show's strengths and charms. Whew, this episode felt like a real even match between those things for me.
Huh, okay. I'm definitely leaning more into the favorable camp. I enjoyed it quite a bit. But there are definitely some seams that need to be, you know, sanded away here. That's true of basically all of modern Trek. And old Trek, too. I mean, all of Trek.
Perfect. I mean, I can't think of a single season of Star Trek The Next Generation that didn't have at least 5 episodes that were just cover your eyes terrible per season.
Sure.
Okay. Like maybe 3-4 though that dropped to 2 or 3, but like Stranger Worlds batting average is superior to almost every the Trek I've ever seen before.
And that's the thing, like I don't want to go at it too hard because the faults I'm finding are pretty minor as compared to previous series. But like,
right,
I do want them to do better. I always want them to do better.
Especially when this same crew wrote like half of the previous series we have in mind. Like if you have problems with Disco or Picard, you have problems with the people who wrote the show.
For sure. But yeah. And they're doing a better job here than they did in either of those shows, in my opinion.
I think this episodic style definitely suits them, their storytelling better. And maybe that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Like this is a continuity piece. This is like, you know, having to deal with like the big threat through the whole series. And they kind of, but I don't know. I just like that this episode could have been better. And I hope the next half they address some of the things that we brought up, because otherwise, woof, it'll be a rough season opener.
Yeah, we'll see. I am excited for the next season. Everything I saw in this season, you know, added up to something I'm excited about. They did not shit the bed here in the second season.
No.
You know, we were so impressed by the first one. I think the second one held up very well. I'm totally in for season three of this show.
And they're allowed to have one episode that one of us hates, you know, like you didn't like the musical episode. I thought this one, again, I didn't hate it. It's, you know, it's just I kept on wincing, you know, like, God, I wish I hadn't done that. Oh, I wish I hadn't done that. And it just added up to a lot of, you know, again, massive excitement for next year. But unfortunately, it's not because of the thrilling part two of this thing. It's more of just like, well, I want to see more Strange New Worlds.
Yeah. I gotcha. That's it for the episode.
Yeah, we just talked way too much about our own stuff, but we're going to have a special wrap-up episode next week where we can talk about our hopes and fears for next season, and maybe your hopes and fears for next season too. And we got a lot of feedback on the musical episode of Star Trek. I'm sure we'll get a lot of feedback on this finale episode. Send all that stuff in to StarTrek@BaldMove.com. That's StarTrek@BaldMove.com for consideration in our fabulous wrap-up podcast next week. We'll be taking a little bit of a Trek hiatus after next week until I don't know. I guess we'll talk about that too. Like if there's any off season plans, we do have a strike. It's possible that there might be some more Star Trek coming up in the interim. So stay tuned. We'll talk more about that next week. If you'd like to follow on what else we're doing, you know, we're in the middle of Justified, City Primeval. We're in the middle of Foundation, which I cannot recommend enough. If you are a Star Trek fan, you'll probably like Foundation on Apple TV Plus. And we are going to be doing a lot more stuff in the pulp and prestige realms coming up in September and October and on in the year. The best way to follow along with everything we're doing is on any of our social media, is at Bald Move, except for TikTok. It's at Baldest Move. Finally, if you'd like to support what we're doing here, you like the cut of our jib, and you want to keep that jib sail taut, kind of lost a metaphor, support.baldmove.com. It helps us out, and you get the ad free feeds and a lot more bonus content as well. StarTrek@BaldMove.com. We will see you next week. Until then, I'm Aaron
and I'm Jim.
Later.